Mr. Needham, your testimony that we heard in hour number one of the program today sounded to me like it was kind of broken into two parts. On the one hand, you were very complimentary of the OMB guidance that's come out about insourcing. On the other hand, you seem to be a little bit more apprehensive about how the agencies will or will not be able to execute that guidance.
That's right. The policy itself is really, it draws on earlier policy that had been developed in the early 90s, and it kind of restates much of that policy, but it also expands on it in terms of identifying greater management responsibilities in terms of implementing some sourcing decisions and making decisions about whether to, in terms of using in-house resources for inherently governmental functions. In terms of the challenges, and this is where we do see a difficulty, is the agencies will face, is one, just the coordination that's required to do this kind of an effort. Insourcing is fairly complex, and there's a lot of functional parts in an agency that are involved and require managers to share responsibility and coordinate. And this is among your human capital people, your acquisitions, your financial, and then also the program managers and how they're brought in on that. So that's one of the first key challenges they're going to face.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also the greater management responsibilities and the things that the managers are going to have to do on an individual basis. Let's expand on that a little bit, because it sounds to me like that's kind of a nice way of saying more work for managers.
Well, you know, it is, in a sense, because you have to really get a good understanding of what's going on in your organization and in terms of what people do, in terms of and understanding the requirements for identifying what's inherently governmental versus what contractors are doing. Do you know what those contractors are doing? And you're going to have to be able to make decisions about bringing what do you bring in-house, what are you keeping in-house, and what should be remain in the commercial sector.
Mm-hmm.
And so that requires developing a very good knowledge, and also the policy letter requires that that agencies have procedures in place and that they regularly do reviews. Now, this is coming from earlier legislation that had been passed, kind of calling for this new policy that OMB is putting forward.
It sounds to me like there are going to be essentially three steps here for these agencies, and you talk about some of these in your testimony. First of all is the OMB side of it, which is deciding what is and isn't inherently
right.
Governmental, what needs to come back in. But this responsibility on the managers, not just to get these functions back in, but there's a middle step, which is preparing the organization to accept this new work. And that sounds like where the brunt of the responsibility and the burden actually is going to be, not just on the managers, but on the people who are in the organization now and are going to be seeing more work, different work, and new people ostensibly
right.
to do the work.
Exactly, and that middle step is the once you've decided that a certain function should come back in-house, then you have that. And the next step is identifying and resolving matters such as the types of services, the numbers and positions to be, you know, insourced, the hiring timeline for federal employees, training and security clearance needs, budget needs for additional resources, facilities, equipment needs, oversight, and capacity that you're going to have in place for these people when they come back in. There's also a cultural change here, because what managers are being asked to do is to kind of it basically focus on the total workforce, as opposed to, well, I've got my federal employees here, and then there are these contractors over there. And in DOD, it's further complicated because you have both military personnel and civilians and then contractors. So you really – and what's being called for really now is you've got a mission and key tasks that have to be executed. Who and how many people do you need? And how do you divide that work among the multi-sector workforces OMB refers to it?
What are the success stories or the success points for doing that cultural change for managers?
The one thing that has to be the first thing that has to happen, and this is based on work we did with the agencies last fall when we were meeting with them on the initial efforts to develop insourcing plans. And the first thing is, one, getting terminology right, getting everybody on the same. What does it mean to be mission critical? As an example, what's inherently governmental, applying the policies, and so people apply the policy consistently. That's the first kind of major change. Another one will be doing cost analysis, and also having the data availability. Difficulty in gathering and analyzing certain types of service contracting data. We've done some work over at DOD looking at their service contract inventory. And what they've shown is that it's not consistent across the services. They have different ways of collecting that same information. So that's going to be a challenge for them in terms of getting agreeing on what they have to, what kind of information they have to collect to make the right decisions.
There are four elements of the guidance from the Office of Management and Budget that you were complimentary of that you said were notable. Let's talk about each one of those in turn. The first one that you cited was the fact that there is finally one single government-wide definition of what is inherently governmental. Why is that important, and why has it taken so long?
Well, there was a definition back in the early 90s, and then there was a definition that was used in OMB A76, the circular on competitive sourcing, as it was called in the last administration. And of course, OMB circular A76 has been around for many years. In fact, this policy on using commercial sources was first developed in 1955. And that definition of inherently governmental changed somewhat over the years. One of the things the new policy letter introduces is a nature of two tests: one on the nature of the function, and then the discretion test. And the discretion test deals with, is there discretion on the part of the official in setting a course of action? And under the old definition, the definition that was in the FAR and in the OMB 76 circular, there was called substantial discretion. Now this new policy says just discretion, and that really adopts what was in the FAIR Act, which was adopted back in, I believe, 1998, which was trying to get an inventory of what were inherently governmental versus commercial positions in the government.
Is it your view that this is a good definition, or just that it's good that there is a definition?
Well, it's good that there is one single definition. Of course, the goodness of that definition will be tested in the implementation in terms of how agencies actually go about it, which is my point earlier about, you know, this is a good policy letter in terms of what it's covering. Mm-hmm. But it's in implementation where the test is going to be is going to prove how good it is.
All right. The second point in this guidance that you cited as being notable is the fact that it retains a list of examples of inherently governmental work from the FAR. Why is that significant?
Well, because it gets at this whole issue of closely associated. When we've done work at DHS. Department of Homeland Security and at DOD and the Army's Center for Contracting Excellence here in the DC area. And we've looked at these positions that are not inherently governmental but are closely associated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, you can define in some ways, as the letter does, what is inherently governmental, and that makes common sense. Because you can see where, you know, a law enforcement function or a court officer and so forth, these make clear sense as a inherently governmental. Well, what about a person who's preparing budget analyses or doing technical evaluation of contract proposals or assisting in the development of statements of work? We found at the Army's Center for Contracting Excellence, that about 44% of the people working there were contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were supporting the contracting officers, the inherently governmental functions. And so by identifying and defining these, you're providing further guidance for agencies to make sure that they're being thorough in their evaluation of who is doing what within their particular organization.
All right. The third point that you cited in your testimony before the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee is the fact that this guidance introduces a category of critical functions. What are these critical functions, and why do they matter?
The critical functions is something that is so core to an agency's functioning, to an agency's mission and operation, and that there's a belief that they have to be reserved to the agency. I'll give you an example. The Department of the Army, a critical function in a combat zone may be different than what it is in a civilian base here in the States. And for example, IT.
Okay.
IT operations made in the United States domestically may not be a critical function. They're an important function, but they're not critical in terms of the success or failure of that mission.
Mm-hmm.
However, an IT operation in a combat zone would be.
I see.
In terms of bringing into, so you need to have that under government control. And so what this is, again, we're talking about management responsibilities. Management now has to go through and identify what are critical functions, because that's what you're going to want to bring in. And this is where it's going to be probably difficult for agency officials to work through, is how do you define it? And that's what I was going back earlier about, what's mission critical in terms of terminology. That's going to be the first thing they're going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. All right. And the fourth point in this guidance that you cited and complimented was the fact that it outlines new management determinations. It seems to spell out exactly what the requirements of the managers are going to be.
Right. They require that there be procedures be put in place, and these procedures be reviewed every 2 years, that they provide training, which is important, so people know exactly what it is that they're required to do under the policy, and also for this training to be done every 2 years. And it also designates a senior official responsible for the implementation of the proposed policy, you know, a point of accountability within the agency.
All right, a couple of questions about just the general insourcing conversation. How many of these are going to come down, do you think, to judgment calls? You mentioned the example of the Army where, in one case, IT may not be a critical function, in another case, it may be.
Mm-hmm.
And so how many of these are, do you think, are going to have to be subjective decisions made by somebody or some small group of people?
Well, the goal of the policy letter is to make sure that these are not that subjective, but that there is objective criteria for which to identify and to make and then to decide. And again, why we were pointing out why it's good that they've identified closely associated positions as well as inherently governmental positions, because this is what's going to be required. Now, this is where there's a problem in terms of implementation, and where things can go awry is in the implementation and being consistent, and that's going to be the test. And one of the key things that agencies told us last year when we talked to them about trying to do this implementation is they need to have working groups, interagency working groups, where they meet and they kind of share notes and experiences and kind of exchange, this is what's working for me, this is what's not working for me, and so forth. And that way you can lessen the risk of there being more subjectivity in the process where agencies are trying to work together to kind of come up with, to implement the same criteria they have objectively, or at least consistently.
All right, and the other major challenge that you cited both in your testimony and earlier in our conversation about implementation is resources. Do the agencies have the resources that they need, the money that they need, and the people that they need to implement these changes appropriately?
Well, they're getting that resources, and it's happening in the budget process. And it's hard to say you can't say to an agency now bring back inherently governmental, and then when they've identified the positions that are inherently governmental or closely associated or are critical functions that they determine they need to bring back in-house, and then you don't have the money in the budget to do that, then you're going to undermine the whole effort. And so, again, this is where you have the whole I talked earlier about getting the human capital,
yes,
the procurement, and the financial and the program people all together to work this through, and there has to be this coordination among them to make it happen. And that's going to be a challenge. It's a difficult thing to do.
Is the continuing devotion of those resources to this effort the only key that we should be looking for as time goes on, or are there other clues that we can watch for to see if this is happening effectively?
Well, one thing that you're going to have to look for is the quality of the data that agencies are going to be using in terms of making the decisions, and in terms of how civilian agencies are now developing these inventories on contract service contracts. So how well are they developing those? That's one of the key things we're going to be starting to look at here is the actual civilian inventories. And we're waiting to see an OMB plan for this to be put into place. And once that happens, then we're going to start to look at that from an audit and evaluation perspective.
Mr. Needham, great information, great analysis. I appreciate your time to talk about this issue today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.